Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Reason Town. I know you thought we were dead, and we're not. but you aren't going to hear Jared on this episode. Today, joining me is Haas Robertson.
Hello, everybody.
Jared's still fine, but Haas is my good friend and coworker, and we just decided to throw together an episode today because it's been too long. Let's get back at it. So if you're not aware, we're in the middle of a global pandemic, which is unfortunate, but it also means that we have it's prime podcasting territory because we get to all sit at our houses with our microphones. So I thought it'd be a good time to make another episode. We haven't made an episode since August, where we said we were going to take a month or two break, and then it ended up being much, much longer than that. So I apologize for that break. But I'm glad to be back here now, and Haas and I are here. We're going to talk a little bit today about how we use Reason at the company we work at, and give you a couple of news and updates. So Haas, there have been a couple new releases of BuckleScript in the last, 6 months, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's been awesome.
Some of the new features I've noticed are we've gotten a new, at least one, if not a couple new versions of OCaml upgraded. That means we got some nice underlying stuff in. We have much better error messages. That's neat. And we also changed, we got to change runtime. This is the biggest thing, I think, for us, for you and me. Changed runtime representation for options and for objects. Now BuckleScript records are represented as JavaScript objects.
Yes, super helpful. Also, big improvements to the compiler. So we've seen huge performance gains, right, from compiling our outputs and everything.
Yeah. Wait, do you mean like our code has gotten? I haven't noticed our code getting more performant.
Our code, I felt like it got more performant. Just the compiler itself, I mean, though. I
think, the compile time on the project.
Yeah, the compile time on the project. That's what I was
referring. Yeah, that's nice and fast. Yeah, that's right. I forgot that we upgraded long enough ago that I forgot how much faster.
Yeah.
And it actually just got a lot faster to install because the newest release, 7.02, has an in-memory standard library. So that actually fixes some of the problems we were having with trying to build on Docker containers. Not that that helps us because we abandoned trying to build on Docker containers because of this problem. So we are a Dockerless, a Docker-free shop right now.
I also think Refumpt's got an upgrade as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so a lot of little improvements, though, that have been coming together. It's been really nice.
So thank you so much for the Reason people, the Reason team, for doing all this stuff.
And I guess since we're talking about upgrades, Reason React, we use Reason React to work, and we've seen major updates. Well, I don't know, have you talked about hooks on the podcast?
I think we talked about hooks and what was coming, but we should talk about them now because we use them now, and they're really useful, too.
Go ahead.
I was just going to introduce them to front-end people. So React has, if you're not already familiar with React, they added an API for that they're calling hooks, which allows you inside of a component to basically just call a function that allows you to hook into some lifecycle behavior. So you can actually use state within components by calling the useState hook, or you can, instead of hooking into onComponentDidMount using a class, you would instead say use effect inside of a React component, and that would call a function for you in certain circumstances. So that's actually been added to Reason React, like you were saying, Haas, but that's been a year or two now, I think.
It's definitely
a year ago?
It's been a while, but it's huge, though, for us in the Reason React because we don't have to mimic those class methods for those lifecycle hooks.
Yes.
And it's more of a functional, friendly approach. So once Reason React was able to have once they wrote the code or the new release of what's it called supported hooks, then it just fits right in with all the functional programming paradigm, and it's been really nice.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And in fact, I know we're going to get probably criticized for this by people who are purists, but we're not using reducers anymore. We're just using state. In fact, one of our projects is simple enough that we just put together we actually wrapped the use state hook. And we made a global state store that just any components that subscribe to it, they just get re-rendered whenever the state changes. And that state can be shared between multiple components, and they don't have to be part of the tree. That's typically a bad idea for performance and for being able to do all the things that to have all the virtues that like the Elm application architecture gives with actions and predictability and stuff. But you know, it's also really practical, and we just can get work done pretty quickly, and the stuff that we're doing with it isn't that complex, so we're okay.
It's been really nice.
So yeah, Hooks, amazing. So yeah, it's weird because we haven't podcasted in so long that it's
honestly like, though the Hooks. Ooh. The whole hook syntax in Reason React is very similar to just JavaScript itself, right? It's pretty distinguishable just due to the syntax and everything, how it's just so functional now. Kind of blends right over.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've been enjoying that. And oh, yeah, you know, I want to talk sometime about like our front-end stack, the tools that we've chosen that aren't specifically Reason. We probably shouldn't do it on this episode, but I think that's an interesting topic. Because it's with React specifically, I spent a while looking at Vue and Svelte and stuff, and some of the virtues that they have is they have a lot of things rolled into the package that are just decisions that are made for you, whereas React is like decision central. It's like, right. Here's the Vue, and if you want to do anything else, you've got to decide which of these 10 packages to add to it. So what I've been putting together for us for a while in my head is just what's the simple approach that we want to take to front-end web stuff. So maybe we'll talk about that on another episode. But what I want to talk about today, I think that's all the news we need to cover right now. Did you have any other news topics to bring in?
Those are the big releases, right? BuckleScript 7. What are we on? We're on latest, right? 7 something? And
7.02, I just upgraded.
Yeah, 7.02. Yeah, great. I feel like those were the big upgrades since then.
If you want to find out what's going on, you can go to the listeners. You can go to the Reason or the BuckleScript blog, or you can go to the Discord Look What I Built channel. I mean, of course, there are always cool libraries being written and stuff that we are not talking about right now that we should be, but we are not. So if you want to catch those things, go take a look there. There are people who are way smarter than we are doing really cool things in there. But let's just talk about our experience a little bit. So we've been using Reason in production, meaning like for our actual main server at our company for, I'm guesstimating, like a year and a half. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been a bit now.
So we're using it server side and client side. And let's see, we made that. So we actually started client side. We started experimenting with it for an internal React app, and we really loved it. We really loved the way it worked. And so we've been migrating from our previous backend stack was written in Scala on the JVM, and we wanted to be more of a JavaScript all around web team. So we took the inherited app, and we've been rewriting it a little bit at a time over the last like year and a half into Reason. And it has not all been roses. I would say, like, there have been some really good things, but I'm pretty volatile in my decision making sometimes, and we're going to talk about that too, because there was a point at which I almost completely derailed us and aborted us over to TypeScript, and Haas calmed me down. So let's actually talk about that. Let's talk about that point and how it was from your perspective. I can then share maybe some of the reasons I was thinking that it would have been better to use TypeScript. But then we could talk about why we continued with Reason and how it's felt since then. I think it's been about a year since that happened, right?
Yeah, it's been a while now.
Okay, so let's...
Okay, you want to just talk about, I guess, the reasons why we stuck with Reason, I guess? My argument was, well, one, since we'd already put so much time and investment into Reason ML, you know, on our front end and back end at the time, it felt like there'd be a big migration cost and we'd have to invest again into migrating overall over to TypeScript. And I really like the ecosystem with, you know, Reason ML. And let's see, some other big ones were, for me, it's just really nice to have our types shared between the back end and the front end. And so I wasn't sure how clean, you know, the rewrite would be. And I guess what were your rebuttals in that sense?
Yeah, we probably should have led with that, huh? So I was getting cold feet at the time. We had written a number of features already in Reason, which I love Reason. I think it's a super cool language. The things that I was getting nervous about were, in fact, I wrote up a big, huge document about it. But the reasons that I was getting concerned were an apparent lack of community, for example. Because, Facebook makes Reason, but it's mostly community-driven. Microsoft is putting tons of money into TypeScript. like tons of money, and lots of companies are using TypeScript. So I was thinking, if we want to spend less innovation capital, meaning if we want to spend less of our money and our time using, like on the fact that we're using an unusual language, we should probably go with something mainstream. That was part of my concern, is like, we are a very small company with relatively very little money. And so we probably shouldn't be spending our money on a weird technology that we like because of its flavor, you know, like you might be able,
right.
I would probably argue that since we're all just writing JavaScript in the end, that Reason is more of like a flavor for developers than it is, like a revolutionary technology. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And okay. I like the flavor. I like it a lot. But I was
me
like,
too.
I was like, should we be spending company money and time on like solving problems with React? Or I'm sorry,
and you feel like
Reason.
it'd be easier to hire new employees that you know, new TypeScript than it was to hire someone that's more like, you know, the FP community is not as large here in Utah, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I felt that way too. And I know that especially like Richard Feldman has talked a lot about how easy it is to hire because they do Elm and people are really interested in that. I don't know that we've really experienced it. We have gone out looking to hire at least once for Reason and got crickets, mostly because we were looking for local people who could be in office with us in Utah, right? And that's just not as rich of an environment as San Francisco is for Richard at the time. And they also, I think, allowed remote work. So I think if we were open to remote work, I think we would get applicants a lot more easily. But we weren't at the time. So yeah, I was worried about hiring. I was worried about mainstream stuff. I was worried about documentation. And also, we were spending a good bit of time wrapping existing JavaScript code in Reason bindings. And that was a non, like, it felt like a non-significant, or like a significant cost at the time. Mm-hmm. We've gotten way better at it since then, right?
Right. And also, you had just gotten through, like, figuring out our whole async solution, our handlers, middleware, all for the back end. And that was such a pain that I feel like once we finally got it to where it was working, we were like, do we actually want this now?
That's right.
At least I feel like that's what maybe my impressions of how you were feeling.
Yeah, so that's what I forgot about that. So I had spent a lot of time, and I keep saying money because it's company money, right? People are very expensive. And so we had spent a lot of time.
It should also be known that we're at a small company, you know, 12 people or so.
Yeah, like 15 total. 12 engineers, is it? Or 12 total employees.
Yeah, around there. I don't know.
And the two of us are the web team. Like it's right. Just the two of us. And yeah, and so we don't, like, we're constantly slammed with things to do and problems to solve and things like that. But we really like the way that Reason like makes us think about problems and approach them. We like the functional way of thinking. And so I forget what point I was just heading towards.
You're talking about the async solution, I think.
Oh, and then... yeah, the async solution. So this, I still feel kind of like, bummed about this, but so this is a question that goes down to runtimes as well, right? So Node.js, I'm glad that we're using it for our server. We're not using native Reason. There are just too many unknowns and problems to solve there. There are too few companies actually doing that. And if there's an interesting talk by Sean Grove that he gave, I think it was at ReasonConf, where he talks about some of the real pain that they've experienced trying to use native Reason on the server side. So we're just using Node on the server side, which is great. But then you have Node problems on the server side, which is you're single threaded, which is great because you have an async like approach to everything. So it makes you try to always write fast concurrent code, not concurrent, async code. But you have one thread. So things like keeping track of a user ID throughout a request session becomes very difficult. And also you have to handle your async, like your callbacks or your promises, like all of your things have to be in an async code abstraction. There's a really interesting talk or a really interesting blog post about this called "What Color Is Your Function?" I should put that in the show notes. If you want to know what I'm talking about there, go ahead and read "What Color Is Your Function?" And so it turns out, I'm going to write that down. What color is your function? Turns out that Node is fine to write servers in, but like there isn't an established single framework for Node that makes web servers easy like there is for Rails. I'm sorry, like there is for Ruby. So like Ruby has Rails. It's like, here's a bunch of convention about how to just make web servers. Python has Django. and Java has play and Scala has play. Node has like loopback from strong loop, and it has express, but Node is really more like microservices. Like, it's targeted more towards microservices and not toward like, here's a big server that you want to do all your things in on Node. Like, a lot, if you're going to do that, a lot of the work falls in the creator's lap to do on their own. It's like, there isn't documentation and convention as much about that. I know you might respond saying that there are projects that are trying to solve these problems, but I would argue that none of them are nearly as established as the projects I just mentioned. So we started to do our own based on Express. And then we realized, oh, well, we need like Express, the way it works is through, it's very JavaScript-y in the way it works. Like, it's middleware, expects you to just have mutable state that you could just mutate the request and pass it along, for example. So we couldn't, Express itself as like a whole framework solution didn't feel very reasony. So we had to write our own layer on top of that.
Which is similar to what other companies have done, right? You know, you see Walmart, who uses Node.js, and they they maintain their own web framework, right, and everything. And
yeah,
I feel like there's all these bigger companies that kind of evolved into that as well. But there are, you know, companies running this runtime Node.js, right?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And I think it's a good runtime for production. I don't think that's a problem, but I at the time I was like, why are we figuring out a web server technology when we're a tiny company that's supposed to be shipping product, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So I actually still feel that way. Like, we're still trying to rewrite the rest of the Scala server. And whenever I see Scala's play framework, I'm like, wow, they figured out so many things that we wouldn't have to figure out on our own.
Yeah, there are trade-offs for sure.
Yeah. And so a big part of that struggle was figuring out what's our code convention for dealing with async operations on the server and errors. And that was, I've talked about that on the show before. It took us like 3 or 4 iterations. We finally got something we were comfortable with. And yeah, so it was about that point that I was like, I'm kind of tired of spending innovation capital on reason when we should just be writing stuff for our company. So I was like, I think TypeScript's going to be the magic bullet. Let's switch to it. And then you gave me like 2 weeks, right? To try it out.
2 weeks to test it out. Yeah.
And initially I was like, this is awesome. TypeScript is amazing. So much is already figured out for us. But then I started to run into all of the problems that Reason solves, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh, no pattern matching. Or,
yeah.
What is it? Abstract data types, right?
Yeah. So or the algebraic data types.
Algebraic data types. Yeah.
Yeah. And like no libraries for decoding JSON into like a type safe object. I mean, like, there was one library, but it had bugs, and like, I was like,
yeah,
wow,
exactly.
Innovation capital is going to have to happen here too.
I think regardless of which technology we had chosen at the time, for us, it seemed, wise to go to TypeScript because more people were doing it. But since we'd invested so much time into Reason and all the, you know, the benefits that Reason brought to us, like we just mentioned, and even the compiler that, you know, with BuckleScript and everything, how I feel like it was faster than TypeScript, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, way, way, way faster.
And so like, there's a lot of benefits that we were just experiencing, and we took for granted, you know, on with Reason, until you went away that you realized, oh, that was really nice to have.
Yeah, because you listed off a bunch of those things. You were saying like, it's a sound type system, so it encapsulates everything. And it also, like, it structures our code very functionally, which we're used to and we like and that we have been doing. And ADTs, and then, I forget, there were some other things. These points you made, and I was like, yeah, those are nice, but we don't need them. And then I started to work without them, and I was like, oh, this is hard again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've been so used to this whole functional paradigm that I feel like when moving away to TypeScript, you know, you're going more towards object-oriented and
procedural.
Yeah, and procedural, and we've been doing functional you've been doing it way longer than me, but, you know, before Reason, we had Elm on the front end, and so, like, we're just kind of used to that, so it made sense in our for our stack and our team that we have here at day one, I guess.
Our brains, like our functional brains, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So then I was like, okay, you win. I guess I'll work on some more Reason features, and once I started working on Reason again, I was like, oh, I can breathe. Like, this feels so nice, right?
Right.
So we stuck with it, and then we kept writing for, like, a year. And now we're like way deep in it and we still love it. There are still problems though. What do you think some of the biggest problems we've run into are, and what have we done about them?
Well, you've already discussed the whole async situation, right? With having us having to use a PPX language and or PPX and everything.
Yeah, I'm actually, sure I didn't say the solutions, but yeah, we use Jared's async PPX to be able to make promises
let
feel
anything,
flat.
Let
yeah,
anything,
that's right.
Yeah. So that helped us out with our whole async situation, but it required a lot of upfront time and cost to just set it all up. But I feel like that's a downside.
Yeah, and we like our error handling still isn't totally clear. Like we still the node way of doing it is kind of like throw an exception and let the request fail, which is the server side way of doing things. That's not really the client side way of doing things. So on the client side, like the Elm approach is like your errors are data, so always handle them, right? Don't just throw them. But on the server side, a lot of the, like most of the problems you run into are going to be things you can't do anything about, like a network partition. So it's like retry it, right? So on the server, it is very much like, yeah, you just want to fail a lot of the time. So so a lot of our approach on the server side has been throw an exception and just let the request fail, right? Instead of instead of using results, for example, and having your errors be data. Because that was that we tried doing that on the server and it just got insane to try to handle that. To have like your whole request be a result wrapped in a result type.
Right, exactly. We were talking about with the whole error handling, right? With OCaml exceptions, how they don't have stack traces and all that, right?
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that, actually. So,
oh, yeah, okay.
So we don't throw OCaml exceptions. We throw JavaScript exceptions when we throw.
Yes. Sorry, yeah, so I mentioned another downside that we were talking about. I was thinking of downsides.
That's good. Yeah, so so the OCaml exceptions in Node don't give it stack trace. So we needed to throw JavaScript exceptions. And then we ran into the problem that this isn't a reason problem. This is a Node problem that those exceptions, when you're doing async stuff, they don't have a stack trace on them that's usable because it happens outside of the main call frame, the call stack. So if your async code throws an exception, all you know is that like, hey, the database failed. I don't know what called it though. You know, right?
Yeah, which is a struggle. So we have to create our own call stack and track it into the code.
Luckily,
everything.
Yeah, luckily Bluebird does that for us. So we use Bluebird promises.
Right.
And we use it in debug mode, which is slower, but now we get stack traces when things go wrong.
Yeah.
The newer versions of Node do have that built in, but you need to use async functions, and Reason does not compile to async functions. And I don't know that it ever will. So
I guess I feel like those are some big pain points for us. Do you that come to the top of my mind. Do you have any others?
I think those were the biggest parts of getting started. Those were the hardest things of like part of it was figuring out how to run Node in production.
That's true. I remember when we were using Docker and putting on we're trying to build like our project and we're like, okay, so how are we going to like figure out all this? Or what was it? Was it with Lambda functions we were struggling with to get Reason working? That's right.
Yeah, we were trying to deploy Reason initially and we were trying to, use Lambda functions or use now.sh. But the compiler, the BS platform package includes the compiler. So it was huge. So our bundles were huge. And they still are, but we've changed the way we deploy now to be more classical. We just like ship code to the server and run Node, right?
Exactly.
So that's not much of an issue. Actually, I still do have a big pain point that I want to complain about, which is when BuckleScript compiles, it actually goes into your Node modules folder, compiles the Reason dependencies you have into the Node modules folders.
Oh,
so
that's right.
You can't just ship your Reason code to the server and then npm install and run. You have to npm install and then rebuild BuckleScript again, or you have to ship your whole Node modules folder over. So I would love it from a deployment point of view if I could somehow have those fragments. Like I like that if you have a .re file inside of your Node modules, I like the simplicity of just the compiler going in there, compiling it, and dropping a VSJS file right next to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't like is that it's sitting in the Node modules folder, and now if I nuke my Node modules folder and reinstall, my build is broken. It would be really nice if we figured out a way for the compiler to say, like, hey, I'm going to actually compile your dependencies into a place where you could still reach them if... and ship them separately from Node modules itself. And so I guess the actual answer to that is bundling, right? Which has also been a huge pain. Like, I don't want to bundle my server-side JavaScript. There are some cool tools for that, but it's still been, I don't want to do that.
Right. We love Reason. We've said a lot of like downsides that we've had encountered here at our company, but overall it's been awesome. That's why we're still sticking with it, right? There's definitely been some pain points. Initially, like you were saying earlier, wrapping libraries was kind of slow for us. But once we've, you know, got the hang of it, it goes by pretty quick.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, if you're just, so I'd say that's gotten better, but also there's been some churn around the design of the libraries and how we're wrapping them.
Yeah, like that's true.
We have four different database modules in our source code because I've come up with four different ways to abstract away the database code, right? And or to wrap it rather. And so that hasn't been that's been a thing that's like unforeseen that we would take so long to learn how to write Reason well, right? So the reason we have four of the database modules is because I was learning Reason as we went. And so every time I learned more, I was like, oh, I'm going to make a new database module that wraps the database so much better, for example.
Well, first we were kind of like, oh, functors are the way to go. And then we've kind of like, you know, switched a little. And so like our opinions just switch over time that the way we wrap our code switches too, you know?
Yeah, totally. And there was a time when our code base was small enough that I was like refactoring the entire code base when I made a change like that. But then I just started versioning the database modules after a while because it got too big. So that's been a challenge. And I think that's still a challenge because when I start side projects, I still go like, okay, how am I going to access the database now? Because there isn't like a canonical database library. Like there are wrappings that people have made for Kinects and stuff, but they each have their own styles and I'm not always on board with how complex they are or the approach that they take. So there is still some lack of clarity if you come to Reason, especially on the server side, around how to do normal tasks, right? Would you say so? We figured it out on our server, but...
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
Okay,
so that's a lot of the downsides of Reason we were talking about. So maybe...
No, 3 minutes left. Let's do the upsides. Yeah.
Do you want to start naming them? The functional paradigm, strongly typed.
I love how fast the compiler is.
Oh, it's so nice.
I love pipelining. Like I just love being able to, and I know that's coming to JavaScript at some point soon. And I actually really lean on the type system while I'm writing code too, because I'll like use variables before they're declared and then I'll wait for the type system to tell me, oh yeah, you forgot to go do that part of the work and declare that variable, right? Where in JavaScript, it lets you fail at runtime because you've used a variable that's undeclared. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'll say like, oh, this equals foo and foo doesn't exist because I have to write a whole nother section of code to get foo. And so then when I'm compiling, I know, oh, foo doesn't exist. It's almost like a to-do list while I'm working. Like, oh, I've got to go write foo now, right?
Yeah, the compiler is super helpful.
That's
also going along with that. We don't often ignore the type system with, you know, like TypeScript, you're often using anys or, you know, it's easier to punch holes through. With Reason, definitely. Though, you're like, oh, might as well just go along with the type system.
Yeah, the type system is flexible and fast and simple. Yeah. That's another thing I love is how simple the type system is.
Well, the whole language in itself, I think, is super, it's simple enough that in most cases, it's actually super beneficial, right? And it's nice to have.
So like comparing with Scala, how would you, in your heart, not necessarily objectively, but the way you feel, when you write Scala compared with Reason, like what are your feels there?
I feel like Scala's heavier. Like it's like, we use Scala with IntelliJ, so it's even super heavier. But when I'm writing the language, I feel like there's not like one right path. I feel like with Reason, there's a lot of like, it's like a right path. With Scala though, there's a lot of ways to write the code and all that it doesn't feel super simple. It feels a little overcomplicated or...
Even in the syntax, right?
It's just like, bloated. That's the word I'd say. I say bloated a little.
Too many features. Yeah. I would say that my biggest complaint about Scala that Reason does well is actually the lack of features, like you're saying.
Yeah.
So Scala has implicits, right? And it also does a lot of things where like if you have an object with the same name as a class, then it adopts all its methods. Like there's a lot of implicit stuff happening in Scala that makes it very difficult to read if you're not like a super Scala person. But in Reason, there are pretty much no implicits. And so, meaning like there aren't that many implicit assumptions at all, especially not an implicit scope. So in Scala, I'll often get thrown off because some object is being used and it's on an implicit scope, because there's some parent somewhere that said implicit val blah equals this, and it drives me crazy. And but in Reason, like, things are very clear. It's like, yeah, you do a little more legwork, but if you need to use a thing, you pass it in, or you put it in scope and stuff. And I love that. I love that simplicity. I think it really lends to the effectiveness of the code.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And the speed. The compiler can be a lot faster because of that.
Oh, yeah. And it also allows us to have good... you know, like type inferences and stuff. The compiler is super
right. So you can leave the types off.
Yeah. The editor integration is pretty nice, thanks to everyone that's done that. Jared's done a lot on that, right?
On Reason? Actually, that's one of my pain points, because like, I think it's good enough to get us by, but bad enough to be frustrating.
I guess that's fair. Yeah. It's like sometimes really good, but then other times it's like,
Often we have to restart the editor because it's crashed.
That's actually true. That's a good point.
The autocomplete often isn't there. In fact, we have a better working version because we forked the Reason language server and we added some new features that haven't been merged or published yet. And the reason is because we broke some stuff when we merged.
I know. I actually went back to the normal one.
Oh, you're on the normal one? Okay.
Yeah.
I've been running on the branch. Yeah, I was working on like adding JSX completion and labeled argument completion. And it was pretty complex. So if anyone is just thinking, man, I sure wish I could contribute to the Reason community in a meaningful way, and I just don't know what I could do, the language server needs some massive love, because it's pretty complex right now. No offense to Jared, but it feels like a hack project, because I think it actually was a hack project. So it could be cleaned up, documented, and like a lot of the code feels really cryptic to me. We did some public pairing sessions while we tried to add features to the code, and it was hard for pretty much any of us to tell what was going on. So if you're interested in making the community a better place, I think that the Reason language server could really use some ownership and cleaning up and stuff like that. I think Jared's pretty busy with other stuff right now. Sorry, Jared, tell me if I'm wrong about that. Anyway, there we go. So actually, I would say that another pain point with Reason is kind of like a lack of standard approaches around normal things, like using Node.js APIs, or like handling promises. Like, there are a number of promise libraries, right? And encoding and decoding JSON, that's another thing that there are like a number of approaches to. And so it's because it's a very exploratory space right now. It would be cool to have some consensus to settle in on that. But just using the language itself is still a delight. I love the module system. I love not having inputs. That's something that I've never regretted. I thought, at first I was like, everything's global? You can just access modules? Oh, this is going to be terrible, but I'll see. But once I started doing it, I've never looked back. I just love having all the modules global and not having imports and files.
Seriously, it's so nice.
Any other faves before we wrap up?
I think that, I mean, do we pattern matching, everything that's functional paradigm, I guess, you know, all that's so nice.
Yeah.
But we love Reason. We chose to stick with it for both our front end and back end. And I guess those were our decisions, right? We weighed those different options.
Yeah. Maybe let's talk about why we justified that, because we're a small team. We're a web team. We are going to be doing much more front end work. And that's going to be React. We love functional programming. We love type systems. So with all of those things wrapped together, it makes sense for us to kind of choose one language and to know how it works well, which is JavaScript, and run that on the server, which is Node, and run that on the client. And we like the way Reason works. So it made a lot of sense for us to have a stack that is backend and frontend and single language and type safe. And so that's kind of, we said, okay, well, even though we have this innovation capital with having it not super widely used, it fits us really well. And that has stayed true the whole time.
Yeah, I think when it came down to it, also when we weighed it down, you tried it for what? TypeScript for about 2 weeks, you said it was?
Yeah, after trying it for 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, after trying about...
And to be clear about that, I've tried TypeScript before
For sure. No, I mean, like trying to migrate into our code base. Yes, that was our biggest concern, was having to migrate away from Reason to TypeScript, or even have like a mesh of both Reason and TypeScript. I think we also tried that out.
Yeah,
and then we're like, we figured out that you were just duplicating a lot of decoders and encoders and a lot of code to have TypeScript included in our project as well as Reason.
That's
just kind of complicated things.
Yeah, that was rough.
So overall, we stuck with it. We stuck with it. We think Reason's great. There's room for improvement, but we're trying to work on improving all those things, right?
Yeah, so we're interested in, if you have any questions, please reach out to us on Discord or on Twitter. I'm at Mr. Murphy Tweets on Twitter, and Haas, you are?
At Haasman333.
At Haasman. Is there an no, there's no underscore? Just
nope, no underscore, just at Haasman333.
Sorry this hasn't been a very structured discussion, but I thought it might give you a nice little window into how we're doing, and we tried to keep it short. So if you want to hear more about specific topics or specific pain points or specific decisions we've made, please go ahead and either reach out to us and ask us privately, or let us know if you want to hear another podcast episode on those topics. All right, any picks, Hossie?
Oh, picks. You go first.
Okay. So, can I pick my own thing? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I won't pick my own thing. I'll announce my own thing. I've been working on some Egghead videos for Reason. So I have a playlist of HTTP server stuff in Reason, and I'll link that in the show notes, but it's with egghead.io, and those are all freely available. So you can just go and learn how to use the PPX for async await syntax sugar. And you can, there's a basic video on using the server library called Survey that came out of the work that we were doing at our company. And I'm actually working on a course right now. I'm not announcing it because I don't know when it's going to come out. And I'm just working on it, but a whole series of videos for how to make a beautiful functional login screen using Reason and React and Tailwind. So that's what I'm working on right now. And for picks, I actually had a pick and I forgot about it, but it's been a lot of books for me recently that I've picked. And so I'm just going to pick The Phoenix Project. If you haven't listened to or read that book, I highly recommend it. I think it was pretty riveting for me when I read it, working at a small company and dealing with ops challenges and programming challenges. It was a thrilling book. So The Phoenix Project, look it up if you haven't, because that's a fantastic book. Anything for you, Haas?
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to say one of my picks is actually something you built just recently, and it's the HTML to Reason. What is it? HTML to Reason. It converts all of your HTML while you're developing Reason. So like you can just copy and paste it into the editor that he has on the site, and then it converts it over to Reason React. And so you can bring it over and get all the compatible JSX.
Thank you for picking it. I forgot about that.
Do you have that URL? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's html.mrmurphy.dev. And I'll drop that in the show notes. But yeah, I forgot. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it is such a pain to copy HTML templates and convert them to Reason.
It's this so nice, though, with that. Yep. Well, that's it for me.
That's it for me. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe out there. Don't get sick. All right, bye.